You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on.
Welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I'm Tim Capper, along with my co-host Cliffy D. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And with us this week, for more than one reason, not just to talk the Alouettes, because he happens to be an Alouettes fan in Tigertown. What the hell? Will Penfold, how are you, sir? And welcome to the Flight Deck.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Cliff. How are you guys doing tonight?
Just another beautiful day in the 514, and I guess in your case, the 905.
905, exactly.
Yeah. We were just talking about it, and I think you just said it best, Will, is that what is there to talk about when it comes to a 33-0 loss and whatnot? But first, because, you know, this is totally, you know, it's the last regular season show for us. We might as well. First, I have to ask, you've already told me the story. I know Cliff hasn't heard it yet, and I'm sure our fans would love to hear this one, because it was amazing. How are you an Alouettes fan in Steeltown?
Yeah, so I'm actually, as a side note, I'm actually not originally from Steeltown. I moved down here because my mom's side of the family is all from here, but I'm from Northern Ontario originally.
Okay.
Anyways, so I was raised a Habs fan. My old man is diehard Habs fan, just belligerent Habs fan. And when I was like 12 or 13, it was right around that age, the first ever Habs game I actually ever watched was the night that Saku Koivu returned from cancer. It was back in April 02, I believe, April 2002. So I remember that night, and, you know, my old man's telling me, you know, this is big. If they win, you know, they're going to win, they're going to make it to the playoffs. And it was like the first time they made it to the playoffs in 4 years. So I watched the Habs make the, you know, the playoffs that year. They didn't do anything. I watched them make the playoffs. And then as, you know, NHL was ending for the season, my old man starts picking up the CFL like he does every year.
Yeah.
Now, my old man is a Blue Bombers fan, believe it or not, but when I started watching CFL with him, well, this is when the Alouettes started getting good. And like I was saying to you earlier, Tim, 02, I think, was the first time that the Owls won the Grey Cup since they had come back. And, you know, so I had watched it. And slowly, just over that season, I wasn't listening to my dad's nonsense about being a Blue Bombers fan. But no, I just kind of hooked on to the Alouettes because, you know, I became a Habs fan. I was like, no, it's a great time to be a Montreal sports fan, and I've just fell in love with the Alouettes.
That's fascinating.
I know, right? what type of slack do you get from fans? Because are you the type of fan who you'll wear your jersey, you don't care what stadium you're in, you'll wear your
100%. Actually, the first ever so I was at the game when the Alouettes, 2 years ago, delivered the Ticats their first ever loss at Tim Hortons Field.
Yeah.
And so I'm fortunate enough that one of my mom's part of the family, my uncle, he's got 10 season tickets to the Ticats. So he just hands them out to me all the time, right? So my entire mom's side of the family's at the game, and they're all Ticats fans. And I'm sitting there in my Alouettes jersey. And the game's ending, and I'm screaming and cheering because the Alouettes are just about to deliver the Ticats their first ever loss at Tim Hortons Field. And, oh, was I getting a lot of dirty looks. I think I might have been one of the few Alouettes fans at that game, too.
That's great. That's great. What a story. That's cool. Now, we mentioned before, 33-0, guys, 33-0, and I was able to find out through through Steve Daniel, our great fan, a great friend of ours, who is the head statistician for the league, and through the guys over at CFLDB, able to find out that the Alouettes broke. It was the sixth longest scoring streak, I guess we can call it, the scoring streak in league history at 373 games. That's crazy. To be first time to be shut out in that amount. Now, just for those who want to know and didn't see my Twitter feed, so the top two current active streaks, as the Owls were third at the time, go to the BC Lions at 817 games.
Wow.
And then the Edmonton Eskimos Guys over at the Empire will love this. It's 7:31. And we were only at 3. That's crazy.
And I don't know if you remember seeing on Twitter this past Saturday, when I was watching the Argos and Lions play, at one point the Lions were down, they had goose egg throughout, I think, the first half, if I'm not mistaken, and finally it was the third or fourth quarter, they finally scored a rouge. And everybody's all happy. I'm sitting there like, wow, even the BC Lions, who've got nothing to play for, the same as the Alouettes and Tiger Cats, got nothing to play for, lost season, blah, 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 they can still manage to score a point.
Yeah.
The Alouettes can't. I even went on, you see that Alouettes coaching staff, those things that the BC Lions are putting on the board, those are called points. Not scoring any is why you all deserve to be fired.
Yeah, you know what? When I was watching that game and they're putting up 0-0, I was thinking to myself, like, these guys gave up in the season, like, but don't they have any pride? Like, some of these guys are playing for contracts, and to put up that pathetic of an effort, and it's just like, where's the pride, guys? Put a little, you know, put something into your game.
Well, I think it said it all when they scratched. I'm drawing a total blank. When Rutley was our running back. He was inserted as a running back instead of Sutton, I think that told me right there, because I really think that if Sutton had been in, the game plan would have been slightly different, no matter who the quarterback was.
Yeah. Yeah, and Matt Schultz was just throwing up lots of interceptions for the final game, too.
I mean, what's your take on that, on that, Cliff? I mean, is it a fair assessment? But, I mean, yes, we had our 13th starting quarterback since AC went down. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment to say that? Do you think that would have happened if we would have scored more? I mean, we had a chance at the end of the game with the punt return that was called back. But
this game was just a classic tale of woe for the Alouettes. I mean, anything that could go wrong did go wrong.
No,
I mean,
it wasn't a tale of woe. It was a tale of no,
or a tale of oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, what the am I doing watching this?
That's right.
Oh God. And Will, I feel for you, buddy, being out there. I don't know how cold it was. I don't know what the mood must have been like. I mean, I'm sure it must have been hard for even Tiger Cats fans to get excited for this game, other than one last chance to come out to the stadium. But
that was pretty much it. Yeah, my wife, it was like 2 degrees out. My wife sitting beside me being very unhappy because it was freezing, watching our team get shellacked around, you know, a bunch of half in the bag people who clearly are happy that the Alouettes are getting bumbled.
Yeah, no. We talked about it before, because I know that I said there's a couple things we wanted to ask you, Will, because you had the pleasure of seeing the stuff, because this is how the league did the pilot project. But we were talking about it before. We talked about Kavis Reed's or the Alouettes year-end press conference that they had. Yeah. And you know, and then the thing is, then the Owls go ahead and they promote the 10, Kavis's 10 steps for next year. It felt more like a 12-step program than anything else. You know, we go from anger all the way down to, I don't know, what is it this year? It's down to loser or something like that. But it felt like one of those, hey, we get a win. Does that mean we get a green chip? You know, we scored. Here's your 1 week chip.
Yeah, you know what? Thank God they got the 3-win promotion out soon, eh? They got the 3 wins out quick this year. Oh man, well that could have been disastrous for them.
It's true. Now, Cliff, what was your take on this? Because I know you didn't watch it live. I watched it live. I was giving the rolling eyes many a time during that thing. But what was your take on what Kavis did or did not say, or what Boivin did or did not say?
You know what's funny? Do you remember earlier this year when I talked about how the fact that we haven't heard anything from Patrick Boivin?
Yeah.
It's funny. Be careful what you wish for, folks, because you just might get it. Every time this guy opens his mouth, he sounds more and more clueless than ever. Like, I'm flummoxed to hear some of the things that are both he and Kavis are saying. Like, I've long maintained that these guys are essentially the scapegoats for the Wettenhall family, because they're the ones that are really pulling the strings. And these two, Boivin and Reed, they're the ones that are pretty much the face of the franchise now, if you will, when it comes to hurling insults, when it comes to throwing shade, when it comes to doing, you know, you want to put all your woes all your misery of this Alouettes team on somebody, well, you'd put it on these two guys. You ever notice how nobody else is looking at other members of the organization? No one else wants to take any shots of that? Nope, it's all Kavis. It's all Boivin. And that's not by accident. I'm fairly confident. Like, no one's ever saying, well, the owners are just terrible people and they don't know what the hell they're doing. Like, it just comes down to, oh, no, it's all Kavis. Consequences, blah, blah, blah. That's really what it comes down to. That's the perception now. And I truly think that that was the plan, really. So having these two guys be the face of the franchise, the talking heads, whatever you want to call these guys, I think that's, again, done by design. And like it or not, this is what we're going to have to put up with. And the only thing we can really hope for at this point is, you know, you can have all the plans and the matrixes and arts and science and whatever dopey nonsense you want to come flying out of your mouth. Just have the right plan in place. Just have the right people in place. I mean, that, I don't know why this is so difficult for this franchise.
I think Andrew Wettenhall likes to get far too involved in this team, like you had said, Cliff. He's pretty much, I agree with you. I think he's the one basically telling those guys what to do, but letting Kavis and Pierre be the face of it all.
Nice. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, with Patrick doing what he did, he's done so far this year. I mean, yes, he's been quiet. He has a new face. You know, he's not like the old regime. I don't know. I mean, would it have been better if he wasn't there and just Kavis? I don't know. Would it have lasted? Would the press conference have lasted 30 minutes? No, it wouldn't have at all. So it's, I watched it with a grain of salt. Because yeah. I've had to live through 18 games this year and 3 wins. And to me, that says it all. They set so many records this year for futility. I joked around the other day when I was talking to Steve Dan. I said, I really would hate to be the guy who has to update the Alouettes media guide over the off season with all these records of futility. Just absolutely atrocious. The records that this team has set. I mean, and we put forward a poll on the Alouettes Flight Deck Twitter account for do people think that the record aside, had to be fair, but record aside, was the 2017 Alouettes the worst team in franchise history?
Ooh, that is a good question.
Cliff, what would, now I'm looking at the standings. What the final tally was, but Cliff, what's your take on that question? Is that a fair question?
Well, it's hard to say because I mean this particular incarnation of the Alouettes, it's only been 21 seasons that they've been around, so to speak. So yes, technically this would be the worst version of this franchise ever. Is it the worst Alouettes franchise of all time? I can't really speak to that, but I mean, when you take a look at everything that's gone on this year, and it's just been like, it's not like you can even say, well, it's been mostly injuries. It's been mostly bad luck. It's been a lot of things. And it almost feels like it was put together like this on purpose. I mean, if people didn't know better, you'd almost think that this Alouettes team was built to fail. And it shouldn't have been, because on paper, when you take a look at all the moves that we've made in the off season, I remember being relatively excited. Like, I mean, obviously concerned because you got a rookie general manager making all these moves. You got a new president in tow. I mean, the head coach, this is going to be his first kick at the can, so to speak, as a head coach in the Canadian Football League. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that could go wrong, but I mean, the potential for things to go right was absolutely there. You're adding all these high powered free agents. And the idea should be that they should all be able to come together. But I mean, at the end of the day, it didn't work. And I still say a lot of it has to do with the coaching. And now that more stuff is starting to come out in the wash, you take a look at what people are like, what players are saying about how Noel Thorpe ran things, how Jacques Chaptelin ran things, and how you had no leaders in the locker room as a result. And certain players weren't wanted or whatnot. I mean, it shouldn't have even come to that point. That's a really maddening part. So, I'll say it. This definitely was the worst Montreal Alouettes franchise or year for the Alouettes in modern history anyways. I guess only time will truly tell whether it's the worst of all time. But, I mean, for my money right now, I'd say that, yeah, this 2017 Alouettes team was absolutely the worst.
Now, I don't know. We know how when you became a fan, Will, for you and what you know of Alouettes history, would you consider the 17 Alouettes the worst in franchise history?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I agree with Cliffy in regards to, you know, in the modern era of the modern era of the Alouettes. So, you know, since they've come back, 100%, it's the worst team ever. Like, keeping in mind, obviously, I didn't watch from 96 to 02, but, you know, from 02 onwards up to they made the Grey Cup, you know, almost every year, every other year. Granted, they kept losing there for a while, but, you know, no, it's for in recent memory up until, what was it, 2012. The Alouettes had been a relative powerhouse of the East, right, and of the league. And then ever since Calvillo retired, we have been slowly becoming more of the laughingstock.
I think.
And this year is it feels like this year culminated in, the worst year that that they had.
Yeah, a recent memory, yes, I will admit. It's obvious. I mean, look how poor that this team did. And we were talking about it before, about the records of futility. We'll go over those in a couple of minutes here. By the way, it was unanimous. Everybody who voted for the poll said that this was the worst team. So it was, it was close. I'm trying to think. I think if I were to look at some of the teams from the late 80s, you know, those are, you know, the 81, 82 team, I think it's what it was. And then the 85, 86 team, it is on par. I mean, it is a slightly, yes, the game is slightly different. I mean, we can say that for any league. You know, what is the worst team in any team's franchise history? It's up there. I would probably say that they are probably one. They would probably be either a two or a three.
Okay.
I think in team history for me. I'm trying to find this. So here. So obviously, as we know, the Alouettes set a franchise record this year with their 15th regular season loss, which is crazy. First Alouettes team to go winless on the road, 0-9 in an 18-game season. The 11-game losing streak that they had to finish the season ties the all-time team record of 11 straight losses for the 1967 and 68 Alouettes. That was over two seasons, so this is done in one. Here's a telling sign, Cliff. They finished the 2017 season by going scoreless in the last 90-plus... was it 90-plus minutes? No, it was 84 minutes... Just over 84 minutes in being outscored 46-0. 314 points scored by the team. It's the lowest point total since they scored 284 points in the 16-game 1985 season.
But this team's not a mess,
no.
According to Kavis.
No. And the 314 points scored in 2017 is the sixth lowest points total for an 18-game season in CFL history.
Ooh. And for everybody who'd said, you just wait, you put Anthony Calvillo in, you let him lead the offense, good things are going to happen. Well, this is as far as a good thing as possible. And again, I really don't want to harp on AC as the coach, but, I mean, if this was anyone else, they'd be calling for his head, guaranteed. But, again, Anthony Calvillo should never have been put in this position at all. It's beyond ridiculous. And overall play calling, this is why I say that you have to clean house when it comes to the coaching staff. Every single one. I'm sorry to say, but I am fully advocating for a complete overhaul. I sincerely hope that when Kavis goes into his matrix and does the arts and the science and everything like that when it comes to selecting the next head coach, I really hope he gives that head coach carte blanche and lets him choose his staff. I hope he doesn't say, well, we'll give you the job, but you got to keep AC on the staff somehow. You got to keep Jason Hogan on the staff somehow. You got to keep, it doesn't matter. Like whoever was a coach on this team this year, I'm sorry, has to go. Whether it's their first year or their 10th year as a head coach or as a coach of some sort in this game, gotta go. I can't stress enough just how much you have to flush out all the bad toxins, good, bad, or other. It's got to be done. It's got to be done, and you've got to have faith that the person you choose as your head coach will select the right people that can all work together. And I think that's really key, is they all have to work together. So you have to choose the right people, put them in place, and let them do their thing.
I think they need to be. I think there needs to be a complete cleaning also. I love as much AC as everybody else does, but he basically was thrown into being the unofficial yeah. OC, even though he was still considered only a quarterback's coach. Speaking of head coaches, what do you think of some of the names, guys, that are being thrown about to be the next Alouettes head coach? Will, any names that really interest you the most?
I'd like to see what Paul LaPolice could do. That's the one I always keep hearing. Mm-hmm. Is Paul LaPolice.
Mm-hmm. Same here, Cliff. And any of all the names that have been thrown out there?
Well, you know what I was thinking of? I was thinking about it today. I don't know if it would ever come to fruition. What about Kent Austin?
That won't happen.
No.
After, you know, like, I know there's people, there's anonymous sources saying they don't want to come back if he's there. And I know he has the full confidence of Bob Young. Right now he does. But, you know, weirder things have happened. I was just thinking, he's the kind of no-nonsense type of guy that, you know, might do well in a new environment.
I don't know. Cliff, any of the names interest you?
Well, definitely LaPolice is certainly one to consider.
Glenn Constantine was interesting to me.
I don't see him leaving Laval, though.
Me neither. Same thing like Machocha. They're tenured. Because they're at a university, they're tenured.
Exactly. So, they're set for life.
So why leave? Yeah.
Exactly. To make a few extra bucks and deal with 10 times the stress, and especially, too, if you know that ownership's going to be trying to meddle in all your affairs, and that if the general manager is not completely on board with you, I mean, and this is what I'm saying, is it's finding someone that you can work with, and you may not agree with everything, but at least if you guys can work together, that's got to be key. It seems clear as day that Kavis Reed and Jacques Chaplin, I'd really like to go back and reanalyze that first press conference where Reed was announced as the general manager, and just hear some of the words that were being said, that supposedly this was my choice all along, this is who I wanted, and now all of a sudden, no, it's not. So how can we trust anyone in this administration, quite frankly? Like, this is the thing that I find very troubling more than anything else.
Yeah. How smart back is, to your original question. I was going to say, how smart does Danny Machocha look now, right? Last year, sniffing around the team, you know, weighing his options, got one smell of the team. You know what? It's not the right fit for me, so I'm gonna stay away from this.
And also, you can't help but wonder, too. You take a look at what Brock Sunderland has done as general manager of the Eskimos. We could have had him and decided, no, this isn't going to work, because and I'm pretty sure Brock must have said, well, listen, you got to let me do my thing. You got to let me bring in my people, this, that, and the other. I'm pretty sure he would have said no to Chaplin. He would have said no to a lot of the things. And Obviously that wasn't important. Like, what was important, I guess, to Andrew Wettenhall was someone who was going to kowtow to him and say, yes, sir, absolutely, sir, no matter what, sir. And again, if that's important for you, if that's what you consider to be important, then by all means, you can have that. But that doesn't necessarily translate to successful football. And I think that was made more clear this season than anything else. So, yeah, and Machocha, too. He's not a dummy. He's not a dummy at all. Like, say what you will about the guy. Maybe he didn't have the most sparkling record when he was in the CFL. But, I mean, for what he's done in the University of Montreal, he's done a fantastic job there. And he would be an absolute idiot to give that up, quite frankly. And I think he realizes that, too. And I think it's always going to hang over their head, the Alouettes. The Machocha sword is always going to hang over their head just a little bit. People are always going to wonder, and people are always going to, you know, get in a tizzy over it, because, yes, he speaks French, and he did so well with his Quebec team, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But whether or not it's going to be a good fit, that's irrelevant as far as I'm concerned, because, again, he's got such a good thing going for him with the Caribans that I just don't see him, unless they were willing to offer him $10 million a year to run the show. And even then, I still think he'd want to do it his way, because I think he's got just that much ego that, and that's a good thing, that he'd want to do things his way. It's his way or the highway, simply. And that's the way it should be, quite frankly.
Well, remember,
should approach this.
When they were going to hire him, they weren't going to give him both the titles. Weren't they going to give Machocha some made up title? He was going to be
president.
He was going to. Boivin's job, right? That's what they wanted to give him, like just president of football ops.
Yeah, just one. Yeah, rather than and director. Yeah, exactly. President and football ops. Yeah.
Yeah.
because of this ridiculous notion that people were going to buy season tickets because Machocho was in charge. Like, when was the last time anyone's ever bought season tickets because of who the president of a sports team was, or even the general manager, or for that matter? I mean, it's such a dumb argument. I feel stupid for even having to address it, quite frankly.
No, I agree with you. It's.
But I want to get back to your original question, Tim.
Yes.
I do like the idea of Laplace is definitely intriguing, especially when you see what he has done with Winnipeg this season alone. I mean, he's definitely laid down the groundwork for a very good football team that right now just seems to be beset by a few injuries more than anything else. But I would find that intriguing. I also think Devon Claybrooks would be intriguing as well, just because for the simple fact that Montreal no longer has that defensive identity anymore. Now that Noel Thorpe's been tossed out the window, this is not a very good defensive team at all. I mean, there were some chinks in the armor when Thorpe had taken over because of any number of reasons. But I think Devon Claybrooks could restore Montreal as a defensive powerhouse. And if you gave him a true offensive guru, like Jeff Garcia, could you imagine Jeff Garcia as offensive coordinator and Devon Claybrooks as the head coach / DC? I tell you right there, that in itself would be a very intriguing combination.
Very much so. I actually like that. I like where that's going. I like where that's going. I guess we'll have to see. I think they wanted to have it by December, so we'll find out.
Yeah, because I imagine they would have, if they want to talk to Laplace or Claybrooks, at least those two guys, I think they would have to wait until after Grey Cup just so they to do their due diligence and all that stuff. So
yeah, for sure.
Due diligence. Yeah. By the way, real quickly, do you think either Nick or Bowman would come back? Both will come back to the Elks, depending on who the head coach was. Or do you think Nick may be back as a coach? Hopefully, maybe with the Alouettes. Nick Lewis.
I'm leery of that. Not to put Nick down by any stretch of the imagination, but this whole idea of former players becoming coaches right away does not sit with me. I think AC's proven it doesn't work.
Billy Parker.
Billy Parker. It was
a lower role, but he was what, linebackers coach?
Okay, again, official title was defensive assistant.
That's right.
So he could have gone anywhere. He could have worked. I think the idea was to have him mostly work with the defensive backs in the secondary, but he also dabbled a little bit everywhere. And that was supposed to be the idea per Noel Thorpe at training camp this year, was to have all the defensive assistants be able to kind of go in and out and offer up their expertise on all levels, whatever that means. But again, same idea. If you really want to be a coach, then it's like being a football player. You don't just go from peewee football to the NFL or the CFL. You got to put your time in. You got to pay your dues. And that's what I'd like to see these former players do more often than not. Again, I go back to the example of Dave Dickinson, Jason Moss, Devon Claybrooks. These are guys that didn't retire and then immediately step into their coaching positions. They had to build themselves up slowly but surely. And again, as much as I think Nick would have a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom to share, there's no question about that. Even when we spoke with BJ, like, he even said that Nick was sort of a quasi coach for him a little bit this year, like sort of an on-field mentor. Do I think Nick has the potential to do that? Absolutely. But do I really want to give him full reins, like a full coaching title right off the hop? Again, just based on the experiences of what we've seen so far here in Montreal, I'm leery to do so. If Nick were to come back to the Alouettes, I would hopefully be because he doesn't want his illustrious career to end on a 3-15 team that was just absolutely garbage. I think his pride would say something about that. Now, if it was a good coach with good potential and all that, I could see him coming back.
Yeah.
I think John Bowman for the same reason.
Yeah.
I think same thing. I think he loves this game so much, and he still is performing at a fantastic level. This again today he was nominated as one of the few All-Stars. For the other West.
Which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So he still has a lot in the tank, as far as I'm concerned. So I mean, he's slowing down because again, Father Time still remains undefeated. But I think the right situation, same idea.
Bowman would want to come back one more year to really set things right and leave the Alouettes a little bit better than how he found them.
He left the door open to that too, right? Like in recent interviews, I was seeing it on Twitter. It even said, you know, he hasn't completely shut the door on retirement. He said it might not be my last game ever played. So it's still up in the air. So I agree with you, Cliffy. If you know, with the right set of people involved next year, he could very well just, you know, want to put another year in to right what happened this year. You know,
it would be nice to see. It would, yeah, I agree. I think. I didn't like how TSN was basically, you know, basically putting that nail in his coffin, saying, you know, 200th game, last game, possibly. That's like, come on, let him say something.
Yeah.
You know, sure, the dude cries during the national anthem. So what? So he cries at his locker. So what? You know, he puts everything into it. Everything. So does Kai Bear. I mean, yeah. So, and you know what? To be fair, all these guys do. They really do. I mean, it's, you know, we are glorified Monday morning quarterbacks being fans, but you know, BJ gave gave some good insight last week. If you didn't listen to the interview, by the way, it's the last episode. Is there anything good? And I tweeted this out and I got a few likes. I think Cliff, you were one of them. I said, if I were to come up with a one positive from last week's game, and we had to come out with something, a game in quotation marks, by the way, I was actually impressed. I really was by the arm strength of Antonio Pipkin. I really was. I mean, I'm trying to remember, you know, we've talked about it before. I think Crompton had a pretty good arm. We know Bridge had a pretty good arm. But for a raw rookie at 22, he could be somebody who, if done right, could become a star, could become a half-decent starting quarterback. I mean, we said that many, many a time again, though, Cliff, but am I right in my assessment?
I think so. I think you're absolutely right. He is definitely a very raw rookie. But you think about it, at 22 years old, the sky's the limit for someone like this. But it comes down to being able to develop properly. And again, a lot of people really thought that AC, well, how can you lose with this? I mean, this is obviously one of the greatest quarterbacks this league has ever known. And this guy's going to be your coach? Oh, man. I still remember Vernon Adams talking to him earlier this season, and I talked to him about like the whole AC experience, and he said, dude, I am so excited. I'm pinching myself. I've got Darren Durant as a on-field mentor, one of the best quarterbacks and still playing at a great level. And I also have AC as my quarterback's coach. Like how can I lose? And well, I think we know how it all ended up, but I mean, holy cow. Like, I mean, in theory, you take a raw rookie, a potential stud like Pipkin, and there is something there. There absolutely is something that can be harnessed, something that can be nurtured and built into something. But this is why I can't stress well enough that you've got to have the right people in place. And I'm sorry to say, AC is not the right people to develop an Antonio Pipkin. Who is? I don't know, but I sure as hell hope that the next head coach of the Alouettes knows and brings in that person to help develop someone like this, because invariably, I think we're going to end up going in a different direction yet again at quarterback and keep an eye on the future. We thought it could have been Brandon Bridge. Didn't work out. We thought it could have been Vernon Adams. Didn't work out. Now we're in the whole Matthew Schiltz / Antonio Pipkin, I don't necessarily want to call it era per se, but these are the guys now that are considered the future potentially for the Alouettes. So, and they could very well be, or they could just be a couple of busts again. But it really comes down to, can we develop these guys into bona fide quarterbacks? And that's going to be a big key right now for the Alouettes going into this offseason and beyond.
Seeing him in person, Will, seeing both those, yeah, seeing Schiltz and Pipkin in person, did anything, yeah, stand out? I mean, Schiltz did okay, I think, in some of the mop-up duty that he had to do. He just, you could tell this week, the O-line, it just seemed like they didn't care. But, I mean, overall.
Yo, he was put in an unenviable position. Like, let's be honest here. Playing the last game of the season, and you're right, it seemed like the guys in front of him were not interested in playing a very good game. I honestly, I couldn't take away much from Schiltz I liked. I mean, granted, I was watching it, and I'm sitting there angry in the stands watching everything happen. So I wasn't watching with my objective glasses on. I was watching through an angered lens, if you will.
Yeah.
You're right about Pipkin. Raw talent I agree with that that sentiment. But will we develop him? I don't know. We haven't developed a good quarterback in a while, so I can't. It's too early to tell, in my opinion, because I don't know what the heck the Alouettes will do with him. Knowing the Alouettes, they'll probably trade him away for some like a draft pick.
Well, I mean, considering he had done nothing. Now, we didn't see how what his work ethic was because he was on the practice roster the entire year.
Yeah.
And I didn't attend many practices. I know, Cliff, you did a few, most of them during training camp. So we really didn't get to see his work ethic and how he did during practice. But as Cliff, you and I know, you can have a quote-unquote good week of practice, but play like garbage on the field. So,
oh, yeah.
That's the best line, right? We had our best practice of the year.
Yeah. Worst quote ever.
It's almost a guaranteed loss when that happens.
I know. Right? It's like guaranteeing a win. You'll lose.
Yeah, of course.
So
want to guarantee to get my blood boiling? Talk about good week of practice.
Yes. It's like shut up, Kavis. Shut up. Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey Popcorn. Bad Monkey Popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouth-watering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com.
Hey folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, AlouettesPodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
Before we talk about the All-Stars, something that happened this past week, and this is why we asked Will to join us also this week, was that the CFL did a pilot project where they were looking at trying to make the command center, what they do in the command center, a little bit more transparent. And for whatever reason, they decided to do it in stadium this past week to, yep. I guess, to test this idea and what it would take for it to happen. And Will happened being at the game. I asked him if he would, you know, report back to us and give us his take on it. And well, we didn't get to see anything. The league didn't really mention anything, Will, at all, because it is a pilot project. It was only mentioned by the commissioner in one of his town halls on Facebook. And I got an email directly back from the league's PR director about the exact same thing. But what was your take? Did they set it up? Give us your take on and your thoughts on how it was done and what they did.
Yeah, I really liked it. But as you just said, they really didn't tell anybody about it. Like, they didn't tell a lot of people about it. I'm sitting there in stadium, and the first example of it was when it was in the first quarter when Schultz threw the pick. I think it was Leonard that intercepted it. And then he ran down the field and fumbled it. Then the Alouettes recovered, right?
Right.
So that was the first example of it that got to see it. And I thought it was awesome because I'm sitting there watching on the screen and I'm getting to see what command center's doing. But you know what? Again, even in stadium, they didn't really announce it. All they said was play under review by command center. So they didn't really explain that, you know, this is a pilot project. You're going to be seeing what command center's seeing. But I really liked it because I knew what was going on. And it was really cool seeing, you know, the play go and then revert. They're reversing it, then letting it go forward again, then reversing it and stopping at different frames. And I thought it was really handy because you got to see the play over and over again, and you did get to see what command center was seeing. But everybody around me in the stadium was like, what the heck are they doing? Why are they showing this on the jumbo screen? So not a lot of people knew what was going on. To me, it kind of reinforced my opinion that a call can always go one way or another, because even in those cases where they keep reviewing them, a lot of the times it's still like there's still a degree of subjectivity there. You know, you could say, oh, it was a fumble recovered by the Alouettes, or no, he still had possession when he went down. It's still a subjective matter at the end of the day. And I do like that review system because to me it reinforced that, you know, any call can be subjective. We can't always be perfect about the call. But I do like to see what command center sees. I think to improve it, you need to have somebody explaining, like, in the booth or on the broadcast, you know, someone from the command center or someone associated with the command center saying, you know, justifying what the why they made the call that they did kind of thing, explaining the logic behind the call. That's my opinion.
So you were not actually able to hear what they were saying in the command center between the document amongst themselves. You only saw the replays that they were
being shown? That's correct. There was no convo. You couldn't hear them talk. It was just them playing this, like, the video on the screen.
Yeah, that won't work. That won't work.
Yeah, like, no one knew. I only knew what was going on because I had paid attention to it and we had talked about it and we knew that this was happening. But, you know, most of the stadium was asking, what the hell's going on? Why are they doing this?
Okay, so and I'm guessing again, because I had brought it up a couple weeks before when they were having a press conference and I called in and made the suggestion. So I'm guessing, Cliff, I don't know if you've seen it or not. Will, I don't know if you watch Arena League football or not. But if I were to able to find a video, which I tried to do, to show what I think it should be, that's the way it being able to hear them talk to the truck or themselves, how they came up with the decision. So it's
that would be handy, yeah.
And did it really work in stadium, or do you think that it would be only something that, because you would be able to possibly hear what the command center is saying, that it should only be something that's done on TSN? Or RDS.
I can see it working in stadium if they're talking about it. It works obviously better in a broadcast, right? Like,
yeah.
Because you're pulled away from the game. There's not the loud noise from the stadium. But I can see it working in stadium. But yeah, for the pilot project, I don't know why they chose not to have like them discussing it. It was literally just the video. But I'd like to see how it plays out with them actually having the open discussion that you can hear.
Yeah.
I'd like before I say yes, that's how they should definitely do it. I'd like to see how it plays out in a game, just to kind of get a feel for it. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think they should do that in broadcast, or like I said, having a guy from the command center who is tapped into their conversation and saying, "Oh, this is how they're justifying the call. This is their explanation of it," kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. I gotta try to find one of those examples from the Arena Football League and post it online, because I think if everybody were to see what they do, especially if you, the fans, don't watch Arena League football, then you don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I've sadly never watched an AFL game, actually.
Okay. Okay. It seemed like it went well. I'm curious to know what the league's going to do. I would say, Cliff, because I don't know if you're going to the game or not, Will, Grey Cup. Cliff, if you go to the commissioner's fan conference, if you have a chance, ask the question.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, we're not the only ones that are wondering about this as well. I mean, like, this pilot project hasn't really gotten a whole lot of press otherwise, other than what Randy Ambrosio has talked about, like you said, during his little Facebook Live fireside chat, whatever you want to call it. Maybe that's done on purpose. Maybe they want to roll out a little bit more, and potentially that could be happening too during Grey Cup week. I don't think necessarily for the actual game itself, but maybe just talk about it to at least get people aware of it and make them realize that, hey, come 2018, this is something that we've started taking a look at, and throughout the course of the offseason, we'd like to be able to develop this and fine-tune it and hopefully present it in a way that could be really exciting for fans. So, I mean, that's always a possibility too.
Yeah.
I have found an example. I gotta find it. I just have to find it and post it. But there was an example in the Arena Football League's championship game this year, and hopefully I can show everybody what I think it should be, because this is the type of thing that I've seen for years. The Arena Football League, it's the most transparent, in my opinion, and this is the way that I think everybody should do it. So it's something. As I said, but thanks, Will. I mean, it's, again, as you said, you have no promotion.
Yeah.
You have people with giant question marks over their heads.
Yeah, there was that, like, everyone around me didn't know what was going on. And even my wife was sitting there and she was saying to me, I don't remember this at any other game. Why are they doing this? Like, what's the deal? And so I had to explain to her, it's a pilot project. This is what they're trying. And, I could hear a couple people listening to me and, saying, oh, this is a new thing. So if you're going to try something and not tell anybody about it, then it seems kind of silly in my mind. But
Yeah, this is something where I'm sure if we could give feedback to the league for people who were there, because I'm very surprised too, is that with the people there that they didn't do some sort of
audio.
Well, not necessarily audio, but they didn't do a survey.
They didn't prep anybody.
Yeah, they didn't do a survey afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, usually you bring in people to watch a movie early to get their opinion on a movie before it gets released to the mass, you know, to the masses. They think they would have done the exact same thing, unless they're going to do more of this pilot project during the playoffs.
Yeah, the only way it was different really is that you got to see the video. Like the ref still announced play is under review by the command center. You got to see the video, and then the ref announced in the cases where it came up, call on the field stands. So no justification, no explanation, no reasoning for the logic. Just here's our answer.
You want to hear the reason why. And supposedly what them took to set this up, you think that they would have done it anyways.
Yeah, it seems like a half measure, right?
Yeah, and it was just, well, we'll see what happens. It was a first-time thing. I get this. And it takes some time to tweak and to mold and to, you know. So I will give them a mulligan this time around, but I'm glad you were there. At least we were able to get an idea of what the league is trying to do in when it comes to transparency from the I got a feeling this is going to lead to bigger things for the command center. Because remember, the command center looks at more things when it comes to fumbles, turnovers, scoring plays, challenges. How will this be used in the CFL going forward if they decide to do this? So it's interesting. And there's a lot of potential there. CFL Today, guys, announced the All-Stars for 2017. I think is this the lowest contingent, Cliff, of all its players that I can think of, and the first time in quite a long time that we haven't had a single guy on offense?
I think it's been a while. I mean, I don't know if it's like mandated that you have to have at least one player from each team. And it really shouldn't have to come to that. I mean, at the end of the day, this is supposed to be all-stars, so it's supposed to be the very best at each particular position. Right. I seem to recall there was one or 2 years where there was just one or two players, but again, you take a look at this Alouettes team, it's kind of hard to find all-stars on a team that goes 3-15, so I guess we have to sort of take it for what it's worth. But the players that were selected definitely, I would say, are true all-stars.
Oh, for sure. And I said, only on defense this year, it was John Bowman at defensive end. It was Kyrie's Angry Birdie Bear at linebacker. And I think a very big surprise for me, considering he was out for the amount of games that he was, Cliff, cornerback Jonathan Mincy.
Yeah, I was a little surprised too, because, I mean, I definitely think Jonathan Mincy is a hell of a talent. I mean, he proved it last year. He had an outstanding rookie campaign.
And he did well in the last game this year. We did well.
He sure did. But yeah, like you said, he got injured and missed a fair portion of the season. And then even when he came back, both he and Greg Henderson, that was supposed to be the deadly duo in the secondary, they just looked, well, average. So I don't know if it was a sophomore jinx or what it was exactly, but Mincy, when he came back, he was just okay. Not terrible, but not as outstanding as I feel he could have been. And I'll just chalk it up to, you know, just trying to find that rhythm. And then all of a sudden you lose not your head coach, but your defensive coordinator, who's essentially your boss and your leader. You lose that guy. And yeah, what are you supposed to do at that point? So I kind of feel for Mincy in that sense, because yeah, the potential is definitely there. I definitely do see him as being one of the young studs that are really going to flourish. And if anyone's going to make the Alouettes secondary a strong force yet again, is going to be guys like Jonathan Mincy and Greg Henderson. Tyree Hollins too has also looked very good as well, and so on and so forth. Like these are some building blocks that you can start building that defense around again and making them outstanding. But I guess I was a little surprised too to see Mincy being nominated, but. Well, hey, listen, sometimes that's just the way it works out sometimes.
Will, any surprises as far as those three? I mean...
Well, I mean, Hebert and Bowman, I mean, they bring it, right? Like, those guys are competitors day in, day out, I feel. I was shocked about Mincy because, you know, he had flashes of, really good games, but then he'd go back to average. He didn't blow my mind this year, right? Like, He wasn't an all-star, and yet he's on the all-star. He made the all-stars. So I don't know how we got on there. If it was just like you guys suggested, a mandated X amount of players have to make it from every team. But I mean, if they're voting based on potential, sure, but not on performance this year.
Now, as many may or may not have known, there was a modification to how the All-Star games are being done, where they took away a running back spot and added a wide receiver spot.
Okay.
So what you guys have seen in the final teams, Cliff, I'll go to you first. Which wide receiver would you have removed, either East or West, and which running back would you have entered in?
Wow. Are we talking about the East or the West?
Either or. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
It's hard for me to say. I'm really surprised that Jalen Saunders wasn't listed as an all-star. I mean, he's one of those guys that, and I'm sure you must have seen him a fair bit too, Will, is he's just one of those guys that has been a solid contributor to the Tiger Cats. Again, it's so easy to overlook teams like Montreal and Hamilton for being just absolutely terrible, but they're still guys that are contributing. There's still guys that are doing extremely well, and I felt Saunders could have made a case for him. Who would I remove? Gosh. I don't know.
I think Sutton might have had a chance if there had been a second spot in the East for running back. I think he would have been at least in the running, but who you would have removed? See, that's the catch. I mean, look at the all the wide receivers this year in the East are very worthy. I mean, Ellingson, Green, Sinopoli, Banks, Tasker. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, you can't really remove any of those guys. Those guys are all like they're all beauts.
So it makes me wonder who would have not been on the list if they had gone with the old rules. That makes me wonder.
One of the Hamilton players, just based on the fact that they had a
Banks,
garbage season.
No, I disagree. Banks and Tasker. I completely disagree with that. I think they would have stayed.
You think so, eh?
I have a feeling maybe Banks because he only came on, but he did get. He did end up getting 1,000 yards.
Yeah. So. If anything, I'd probably say Tasker because I mean, like you said, if you're going to keep one Hamilton guy, I think Brandon Banks, he was left for dead early on this season.
Yeah.
And then was able to reinvent himself with June Jones taking over as coach. Whereas Luke Tasker, I mean, he's always kind of there, but not really. I didn't feel outstanding. So I guess if you put a gun to my head, maybe choose of one of those guys, I probably would have gone with taking Luke Tasker off.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to look at and to say what if, but I mean, yeah, it's funny. Hey, Hamilton still had two more people and two more people on offense than the Alouettes did entirely. So they still had more people and they had only three more wins. But then again, they did a role reversal. Both teams did the exact opposite this year. You know, started off like garbage and then Hamilton finished up fantastically after a head coaching change. Alouettes, nothing.
No, they started out bad and somehow managed to get it.
Cavis, we can actually say, you know what? Hey, Cavis, you did fantastic this year. You are actually perfect.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I mean, one thing that's often like that we've kind of overlooked with the Alouettes too is they almost went 2-16. You know, like they.
It's hard to argue that.
Yeah.
Then again, they could have been 4-14 if they hadn't blown the game versus Winnipeg.
That was a heartbreak game. I was describing it to a colleague because I went into work it was the next day. I went into work and I was dead tired. And they were saying to me, well, what's the matter? Why didn't you sleep? And I was like, well, you see, Montreal blew a game in the last under a minute and I couldn't fall asleep till 3 a.m. due to the rage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just asked my wife how mad I was.
Yeah, I just remember just sitting there just seething. I couldn't believe it.
All I can say is RIP sofa.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that poor sofa.
My poor sofa. It's now forgiven me. You know, I keep on running the opening of The Simpsons over and over again, so he just keeps seeing the sofa sketch, so he's happy now. Going forward now, guys, we're at the end of the 2017 season, one of the worst ones in team history. what do we as Alouettes fans have to look forward to? I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time we had a legitimate first round draft pick, and you know, no, we're not going to trade it away. Thank God, isn't it one of those years where we traded the first pick away? Yep. That would have been even a bigger slap in the face. What do we have to look forward to going forward in this off season? I mean, it's, you know, in June's coming up. Season will probably, I'm guessing, will start mid June this year because of the changes and the additions to the extra bye week, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's closer, but Will, you as an Owls fan, what are you hoping to see this off season?
New coaching staff. I want to see what happens to Durant. What are we going to do in our quarterback situation? Are we going to play Durant next year? I'm hoping not. Who are we going to get to replace him? Are we going to go with the young guys? Or, you know, are we going to trade for someone? Kaleros, perhaps?
Free agency. Who knows? Free agency is going to be nuts this year, in my opinion.
What's that?
Free agency is going to be crazy this year when it comes to quarterbacks.
I agree. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I mean, not to always be a pessimist, but we can't possibly do any worse than this year, could we?
Well, the positive thing is, and I'm sure you've heard it, and I'm going to just remind everybody, the last time that the Alouettes had three straight years that they lost, that they didn't get into the playoffs, the next year they went to the Grey Cup and I think won. So, fingers crossed.
That is a big fingers crossed there.
Cliff, I know you're interested in seeing what's coming up with the draft. I know you keep track of the draft a little bit more than I do, but what are you looking forward to?
Well, that to me is going to be the interesting thing, is because, yeah, I don't know if that's a positive necessarily, the fact that we're going to have the first overall draft pick. I guess you find positive where you can. So to me, it's going to come down to, okay, we've got the pick of the litter. We can take the best possible player. Like, who do we select? Who is it going to be that Montreal will draft first overall? And I guess it comes down to, what's the glaring need? And I guess until we know for sure, I still haven't had a chance to really delve too much into all the potential studs that are out there in U Sports and in the NCAA as far as Canadian talent goes. So it's still for me way too early to even think about that. But that is something that I'm going to be definitely thinking about during the offseason is, okay, once we know for sure who the best players are that are going to be available for the draft, who are we selecting? Like, what's going to be in Kavis's mind anyways, the number one area that we need to address, and which I want to believe we're going to draft the best player possible, because that's always how you have to handle the draft. But who are we going to draft, and what position, and how do we build around that, and so on? To me, that's always the intriguing part of this. And as far as the rest of the offseason goes, you're absolutely right. We're kind of in a holding pattern right now because we don't know what's going to happen coaching-wise. I mean, it's like a game of dominoes. Like, that first domino has to fall, and it's going to come down to who Montreal hires as the head coach. And from there, what coaching staff is going to be put together. And from there, free agency is going to come. And who does this coaching staff feel most confident in? Do they feel confident that Darren Durant just had a really bad year and will bounce back? Or do we cut our losses, let him go, and go find another quarterback while we're trying to potentially develop the future? That's another question that's going to have to be asked, and we'll eventually get an answer to. So there's definitely a lot of variables here. I mean, you're absolutely right, though, Will. I mean, we can't possibly do worse. I mean, statistically, yes, we can. We can go 0-18 or 1-17 or so on. But I mean, at this point, 3-15 has to be a real wake-up call for this entire organization, top to bottom. You have to look and realize that, oh man, we f***ed up royally. And how do we get ourselves out of this mess? How can we undo what we did? And I think that's going to be the key going forward. And this is a question you always have to keep asking yourself as a member of this administration, is how do we avoid what we did in 2017? Because that cannot happen again. It's inexcusable to go 3-15 with all of this talent and supposedly these great coaches and blah, blah, blah. Now that we know that that's been proven to be not correct whatsoever, how do we go forward now? That's got to be the key. And I think that's going to be one of the many, many questions that this administration the fans of this organization, and pretty much everyone else in the Canadian Football League is going to be asking of the Montreal Alouettes this offseason.
Yeah, I just wanted to get some stability with head coaches. I don't think I've ever followed a team that's had, you know, head coaching changes, you know, three seasons in a row, four out of the last five. It doesn't do much, I'm sure, for morale. It doesn't do much for stability. You know, the players can buy into somebody, but how much can you buy into them if you think that they're only going to be there for a little while? And Kavis is in that exact same boat too, because we knew he was just going to be an interim head coach. You know, then we hear the news that, you know, the story in the Gazette this week about Nick Lewis and talking about certain people, no names or name, but it was obvious who he was talking about a lot of the names that we have on our team were gone. We're going to be, ditched. So we need to get some new blood, so to speak. Somebody with some CFL experience, knows what he's doing, and take advantage of this first round draft pick. Do not draft somebody, please, is going to end up in the NFL. I hate it when they do that, by the way, guys. They have an amazing first round pick and they choose somebody that they don't know if they're going to come into the CFL or not right away. To me, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, so leave that to a second round draft pick or something, or later if that person's available. What's the point of, you know, you own their rights? To me, that's just as good as picking somebody and putting them on your neg list.
Well, that's something that Jim Popp used to do several years ago, back when this Alouettes team was a lot more stacked and obviously a lot more successful, was you were able to make those kind of picks. It was almost like playing with house money. Like, okay, well, I'll draft this guy knowing full well that he's going to want to go and exhaust all of his NFL opportunities, and maybe one day he'll come back and play for us. Kind of like what Philip Blake, for example. He wasn't a first-round draft pick, mind you. He was more, I think, third round, if I'm not mistaken, from the CFL draft. But again, Pop drafted him knowing full well that he was going to go to the NFL and he was going to exhaust those possibilities first. Same thing with Von Martin. Unfortunately, that one didn't work out so well, but Pop was able to do that because there was once upon a time, folks, believe it or not, that this was a very deep, very stacked Alouettes team. That team is no more. Sorry to say, but this is not that Alouettes team any longer. Like, this is going to have, like, you're absolutely right. Whoever we draft with this first overall pick has to be an absolute stud, someone that can play right away, someone that you can build around, someone you can be a potential franchise player. Right. You definitely cannot screw this pick up.
And by the way, I know I'm nitpicking on this one here, guys, but Kavis Reed, it's called U Sports now. It's not CIS. I mean, I think they still do that on TSN. Like, dude, they've changed. They've rebranded. I know I'm nitpicking. I know, but still.
Old habits die hard, Tim.
Okay. I hope he doesn't. It's like, anyways, as long as they don't draft a dead person.
Leave that to Ottawa. That was their thing, wasn't it?
Yes, was more than once. I think it was more than once. But anyways, I'm curious to see who they bring in as head coaches too. Not only as the head coach, but who else is brought in. A lot of names are really floating around. I know there are some coaches that are very interested in helping with this team defensively. It could be hopefully an interesting season. We don't want another cluster of an off season. We really don't, because that may just equal a bad 2018, and I don't think this team can afford another bad season like this.
They really can't. It makes me happy to see, like, a lot of the folks that we follow on Twitter, they're Alouettes fans. A lot of them are renewing their season tickets, and they're still believing in this team. I think they realize that this is not normal. This season was just, and it should just be, a blip on the radar. And God willing, that's all it's going to be, is just a minor speed bump, whatever euphemism you want to use. With that in mind, I really hope the administration does take note of that, see that the fans still have the faith, they're still willing to give this team another chance, and don't screw this up. That's all it really comes down to, is you've really got to take the best, like I said, starting right now with head coach and the coaching staff. Yeah. It's got to be the best possible. Don't hire yes men. Don't hire people just because you like them. Don't hire people that you think might work out because you owe them a favor or whatever. It can't be like that. You have to put together the best possible staff and let your football people make the football decisions. It can't be simpler than that. You start doing those things, and people are going to buy in. People are going to believe in this team again. And then free agency hits, you find the right players. You get those players that belong on this team. And you'll know in time, this coaching, if you get a good coaching staff, they're going to know who's worth keeping on this team and who has to be shown the door. I mean, we've got our opinions, and everybody's saying this team's got to get younger, and that's absolutely true. But there's still some veterans that still have a presence and still deserve another shot at being the leaders on this team. And God willing, a good coaching staff is going to know right away who to keep and who to let go. And it just goes from there. And you just build on that. And you keep building on that. And eventually, this team is going to get itself right again. I have absolute faith in that. Whether or not it's going to be Kavis Reed at the helm as the reason why this team is going to be good again, jury's still out on that one. I hope so, because at the end of the day, we're fans of this team. We care about this team. We support this team through thick and thin. That's the way it's supposed to be. But don't play us for fools. That's what it really comes down to, is don't make us look stupid for being Alouettes fans.
And considering, guys, that if we can give the teams major shade in 140 characters on Twitter, just think what we can do with 280.
Oh, yeah,
not wrong. Some people should actually have less than 140, in my opinion.
I can't argue that.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
I'm sure some people think I should have less than 140.
So we are. This is the last show of the regular season. Cliff and I have some ideas of what we're going to do for the coming off season. So stay tuned. So you will be hearing from Cliff and myself and many more guests before the beginning of the 2018 season. So that we can guarantee. So keep an eye on our social media feeds, and keep an eye on both of our feeds, and we'll make sure that we let you guys know when we're going to be on next. Will, thank you ever so much for joining us. You are welcome back anytime, dude. You can talk a good game.
Thanks for having me, guys. This has been a blast.
Will, where can we find you on social media, just in case anybody wants to throw you a follow, which they absolutely should?
It's at W Penfold. So it's not very creative. It's just my first initial, last name, at W Penfold.
All righty. There you go. Oh,
perfect. So again, we will be talking with you guys very, very soon. Cliff, thank you for a great year two. We are looking for many, many better things for year three coming up for the Alouettes flight deck. But we will be talking to you fans later on this year. So for everybody here at the Alouettes flight deck, for Cliffy T, Will Penfold, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.